I'm Frank Jones. I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Judy and the committee for allowing me to come and participate at your meeting, and I want to thank Richard for picking me up at the airport and then having me over for dinner with a bunch of members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was a good late afternoon, and it's been a good night, and it's good to be here. And if Alcoholics Anonymous didn't work, somebody else would be standing here. I can tell you that. Somebody's almost standing here tonight anyway other than me. I've been had a doctor tell me I have pneumonia on Monday, and God, I hate that. The hell does he know? And so it's just good to be here, and it's good to be sober, and I want to thank Lonnie for his talk. I got to tell you something, though, Lonnie. Your parents didn't spend all their time drinking if they had 9 kids. They were doing other things, okay, dude? But I have a great life today, and I have a great life not because of the car I drive, the clothes I wear, the job I have, or the home I live in. I have a good life today because Alcoholics Anonymous has shown me a way to have a quiet head and a calm stomach. And that's all I wanted when I got here. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't believe in God. I had done too many bad things to too many people, and if there was a God, I was screwed, and I knew that. I didn't want to pay attention to Chapter 5 when it was read. I didn't want to listen to the 12 traditions when they were read. They didn't have anything to do with me. I wanted to sit in the back. I wanted to look cool. I wanted to have all the women. I wanted to be hip, and I wanted to be slick, and I didn't care about Alcoholics Anonymous. And the reason I didn't care about it is because I didn't know anything about it. And I had contempt prior to investigation or any knowledge whatsoever. And so I acted the way I acted until the pain got even great enough in sobriety to where I had to start doing some things, and I'm glad I started doing them. Started applying Alcoholics Anonymous in my life, and the more active I got in Alcoholics Anonymous and the more respect I showed for this program, the quieter my head got and the better I acted when I left the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm glad I stuck around long enough to find that out. I mean, I have no reason for being an alcoholic. I mean, look at me. I don't look like an alcoholic. You folks look like alcoholics. This is a grim sight standing up here, I'm going to tell you that. And I was born to great parents. Mom and Dad weren't alcoholic. They didn't abuse me. I'm not from a dysfunctional family. If the family was dysfunctional when my two brothers and I left home, it got back to normal. But I had a great childhood. I grew up in Danville, Illinois, and I had a tremendous childhood. I did everything as a kid that kids like doing. I played Little League Baseball and Pony League, and I played football, basketball, and run track. And you know, that's not why I'm an alcoholic. I come into Alcoholics Anonymous. I did that inventory. I read it to my sponsor. We talked about my defects of character and my shortcomings, and I found out some things about me growing up that I don't analyze my childhood. I don't look back on my childhood and think I missed the damn thing. I'm 63-year-old and I'm still in it, so I didn't miss anything. But I found out growing up I was a thief. I didn't analyze being a thief, I just stole. I stole all the time because it's easier to steal than it is to stand in line and pay for something. And when you leave the store, you got the item and your money, you're a double winner. I liked that. And then I'd give it to my friends so they'd like me. That didn't make me an alcoholic. Mom and Dad never even taught me to steal. I picked that up on my own. I lied all the time. I just grew up lying. I had no reason to lie. I mean, I won 9 varsity letters. I had offers to go to college and play basketball. I had no reason to lie. Except when you're a liar, you can be anything you want to be. And when you tell the truth, it's just out there. So I lied all the time as a kid. And I lied growing up, and I lied as an adult. I've been a truck driver, cross country. I've been an airline pilot. I've been a dentist. Hell, I've been a gynecologist. I've done it all. And that didn't make me an alcoholic. I cheated all the time because I never wanted to work hard and earn anything because I'm lazy. I know none of you are lazy, but I'm lazy. I've always wanted a job where you sit home, go out and check the mailbox and the check's there. This is going to make the newcomers crazy. I have that job today, okay? I go out and check the mail to see if there's checks in it. That's all I do today. But that didn't make me an alcoholic. I wanted to be a macho tough guy growing up. I grew up with Wild Bill Hickok and Lash LaRue, all these macho cowboys. And I wanted to be macho, but I was ashamed and I was afraid of the dark. I couldn't tell anybody about that. I was ashamed of that. I felt like a wimp and a wussy. And that didn't make me an alcoholic. I went to my first party in Danville. It was a hot summer night, and all the guys from the ball team were there and our girlfriends. And my girlfriend brought me over this big iced tea glass full of slow gin with 7-Up in it. I didn't know what slow gin was. I'd never heard of it. But it was red, and it had ice in it, and it looked like strawberry Kool-Aid. Well, that was my drink of choice. So I took a little drink of it, and it tasted like strawberry Kool-Aid. And so I chug-lugged that glass of slow gin and 7-Up down. Nothing happened. It was not a big deal. I gave her the glass, said, get me another one. She brought another one, and I drank that down. Nothing happened. I didn't put on an old wrinkled trench coat, throw a bottle of wine in a paper bag, and shoot to Skid Row. I didn't talk to the high school counselors and say, hey, how do I become an alcoholic? I want to speak in Las Vegas sometime. There's a claim to fame, for God's sakes. You know, I didn't do any of those things. I drank that night. I wasn't drinking for the taste or the effect or what alcohol was doing to me or for me. I wasn't drinking for any of those things I've heard in AA meetings. I was drinking for one reason and one reason only. All my buddies at the party were drinking. And they were having a great time. They were laughing and dancing and hugging and munching their girlfriend in the corner. And I can't do that. Because I'm self-centered. I'm self-obsessed and I'm standing up on the wall and I don't want to ask you to dance. You're going to say no. And I don't want you to say no, and I don't know how to dance anyway. So I don't want you to make fun of me. And I don't want to talk to you because you're going to think I'm stupid. And I thought if I drank like my buddies were drinking, I could have the fun my buddies were having. That's why I drank that night. That's the only reason. And I drank almost... Is that a cell phone, for God's sakes? Do we have an organ transplant surgeon in here? It'd be the only reason to have your phone on. Well, I guess he's important, that's all. Well, good for him. He's the only one in AA. Well, I forgot where I was. I got to start over. That's why they have you turn cell phones off in meetings. It just messes the speaker up. But anyway, what happened was I didn't put on a wrinkled trench coat and head to Skid Row. I didn't do any of those things. I just drank, and I drank almost a gallon of slow gin in about 30, 40 minutes. It was a hot summer night, and nothing happened. About 20 minutes after I drank that last glass down, I found out where slow gin got its name from. I got drunk as hell. I went into a blackout. I passed out after they took me home, and the next morning when I come to, I'm puking up everything I'd eat and drink that night. I'm sicker than a dog. I have a terrible hangover. My head's pounding, my stomach's upset, and something else is funny. I can't remember how I got home. You see, I didn't know what a blackout was back then. I didn't know a blackout was an indication you had a problem drinking. I come into Alcoholics Anonymous. The old-timers in my home group snapped me up and said, only alcoholics have blackouts. Normal drinkers don't have those. And a blackout's when you consume alcohol, Frank. You go out and do whatever it is you're going to do that night, and the next morning you'll have amnesia about all or parts of that night. And that's a blackout. And I didn't know that. I thought everybody at that party experienced what I experienced. I missed 3 days of school with a terrible hangover. I went back to school and the guys told me about that night. They told me I was dancing and laughing. I guess I had a big time. I don't remember it, but I had a great time. Some guy said something and I punched his ticket, and I liked the recognition I got from that. I knew I must be in trouble, but I liked the recognition. The other thing I got out of that night to tonight is I don't drink 7-Up anymore. This is the only disease in the world that will kill you, and your head will always blame something else for any of your problems or anything that happens. And I blame the 7-Up that night for being sick and being miserable. And so I don't drink 7-Up no more. I didn't turn into a blazing alcoholic and get the shakes in study hall when I didn't drink. I drank when I could get it, and it was on weekends. And on weekends we'd go out and we'd drink, and I'd get in fights, and I'd steal stuff, and I'd give it to my friends. I'd get in trouble. Because when I drink, that's what I do. When I drink, I don't care about it. Rules and regulations or responsibility. I don't care about those things when I drink. And so I kept getting in trouble. And about 2 weeks before I'm supposed to graduate from high school, I have this scholarship to go play basketball. And now I have a committee in my head that talks to me. And I've manifested something else that I knew was coming all along anyway, and it's called fear, because I was afraid of the dark. And I'm afraid to go to college. What if I don't make the basketball team? That scared me. I don't want to go to college and look bad. What if I don't get grades good enough to make and stay on the team? Well, those things fill me with fear. I didn't know it back then. I didn't analyze it or think about it. But I made a keen alcoholic decision rather than face that fear. I quit high school. It made sense to me at the time. Can't go to college on a scholarship if you don't graduate. So I quit. 2 weeks later, I'm drinking with the guys and stuff, and we're having a big time, and I'm a macho guy. I want to be a tough guy. I used to wear glasses and skinny and stuff, but I wanted to be tough, and I made a keen alcoholic decision. I joined the Marine Corps. And if you're a wimp and a wussy and afraid of the dark, don't go in the Marine Corps. You ought to probably go in the Navy, you know. Or you could go in the Army. Doesn't make any difference. Six of one, half a dozen. And I joined the Marine Corps, and I'm on a train. I'm going to go up to Chicago to get sworn in, and I'm full of fear. And I'm homesick, and I'm lonely, and I can't let anybody know about that because I want to be a man. I'm 17. I want to be a man. And I'm sitting next to a guy. Shit, he probably looks like Keith Drum when he had hair. This guy here had a ducktail haircut, long sideburns, wearing a black leather jacket, had the zippers and doodads on it and stuff, big chain around his shoulder. And I want to hang out with this guy in Chicago. He ain't afraid of anything. He's macho. I know that. He's drinking out of a little brown bottle. He asked me if I wanted some of it. I want to fit in with him, so I got to say yes. So I take that bottle. I chug like two or three big mouthfuls of it. It's whiskey. I don't know how you drink whiskey at the age of 17. But I tell you what I did. I sprayed that crap all over the seats in front of me. I had whiskey coming out my nose. I got my eyes watering. I can't breathe. This guy's looking at me funny because I look like a wimp sitting there. I drank, sprayed it all over the seat. And I hate the feeling of being a wimp. And I wiped off my mouth and I handed him the bottle and I said, you know, that's pretty good. He said, you want some more? And I said, hell, I can't breathe. I drank to fit in. I drank to feel a part of something. I wanted to be a part of the brotherhood. I got sworn in up in Chicago. They sent me to Marine Corps Recruit Depot, San Diego, and I went through boot camp scared and afraid. I can't tell those other guys in boot camp I'm afraid. Marines ain't supposed to be afraid, and I learned to put a facade out there. And I learned to act like what I thought a man should act like. And I was a phony. And I struggled, and I got through boot camp, and they put me at Camp Pendleton in the infantry, and 1962, the Cuban crisis happened, and we went down the coast in a convoy, went through the Panama Canal, and I'm afraid, and I can't tell anybody about that fear. It's eating me up. I'm ashamed of that. I feel like a wimp and a wussy, and I hate that feeling. Nothing happened down there in the Cuban crisis, and we went back through the canal and went over to the Far East for 13 months, and we unpacked our gear, and the first night, the guy said, hey, Frank, we're going out in the Ville and get drunk. You want to go with us? And I felt like a man. The guys that asked me to go in the Ville, I don't know how many of you have been in the Ville, but I'd never been in the Ville, and it sounded cool. And I went out with those guys in the Ville that night, and we bought a Typhoon Fifth of sake. And we started passing that bottle of sake around, and these guys were drinking it, chug-a-lugging it, and they're doing that male bonding thing that macho guys do. They're punching each other and hugging and neck-locking everybody, and they're ooh-rahing, and, you know, that impressed me. And that bottle come around, it got to me, and I chug-a-lugged three or four big mouthfuls of it. I don't know how you drink sake at the age of 17, but I sprayed that crap all over their shoes. I got sake coming out my nose, my eyes are watering, I'm standing there, I feel like a wussy, and I hate that feeling. They're laughing and pointing at me, and I hate that. I hate being laughed and pointed at. And that bottle come around again, I chug-a-lugged some more, and I threw it up again. And I learned something that night in Okinawa. You can't let looking bad bother you if you're going to be an alcoholic. You got to be able to hang in. I think that's important. And I hung in. I think that's good because I'm here tonight. And but that bottle kept coming around, and I kept drinking it, and something funny happened. I finally held enough sake down, and I don't know what alcohol does for you. But I'll tell you what alcohol did for me from that night to the end. I looked at those five or six guys I was drinking with, and I realized something. These guys are punks. Why am I hanging out with these sissies? You see, when I drank, I didn't need anybody. I don't need anybody when I drink. I can entertain myself. When I drink, I don't care about responsibility. When I drink, I don't care about being mature. when I drink, I don't care about, well, I don't care what you think about me now, but I really didn't care when I was drinking. And I didn't care whose feelings I hurt or whose life I walked through when I drank. And I left those guys and went out drinking on my own. I don't need those guys. And I'm drinking in a bar. I'm shooting pool with a Marine from another unit. He said something that evidently offended me, so I hit him in the face with a pool cue. Now, it looked cool in the movies. Now, they're calling the military police, and I don't want to go to the brig. He's laying there bleeding. I feel bad about that. I knew I shouldn't have hit him like that. And I know I'm in trouble. I'm 17-year-old. I know I'm in trouble. I know I'm going to the brig. And I run out of that bar down through the alleys in Anoka, and I go in another bar. I sit in there, and I order a couple of shooters and a beer, and I drink that down. And the more I drink, something funny happens to me. I don't care about hitting that guy with a pool cue anymore. I don't care if the MPs walk in that bar. If they walk in that bar, they're not going to take me alive. We're fighting it out. That's it. That's the attitude when I drink. I really didn't care because I didn't know, because I'm drunk. I didn't know that. I didn't know that's how I got when I got drunk. And then I started bragging to the Marine sitting next to me about hitting a guy with a pool cue. And then I look down at the end of the bar, and there's a Nason sitting down there, and I'm a sucker for a pretty face. Women have been able to take me for every dime I've got my entire life. It's just, it's another 12-step program, I'm telling you. And this lady comes sliding up next to me, and she asked me to buy her a drink, and so I bought her a drink. And then she started telling me about this sad story about her mom that needed surgery. And it broke my heart. It did. I have a soft heart. So I gave her some more money. And her and I trudged the road of happy destiny to her hooch. You know, and I'd like to stand here and tell you, we had such a great time that night, she probably still remembers it to this day. It was over too quick for me to remember it. And that embarrassed me and made me feel like a wimp, and I hated that feeling of being a wussy. And when she went to clean up, I stole my money out of the headboard and set her house on fire. I mean, it's just, there's a tab to pick up. I'm just there, and I went back to the base and I passed out. And the next morning at Reveille, I come to and I'm puking up everything I had eaten, drink in the Ville that night, and I have no recollection of what happened in town that night. I don't remember anything that happened. And the guys in the head are telling me the MPs are looking for who hit the guy with the pool cue. And that guilt and that shame come back. And I don't know how I'm going to do something about that. And then they tell me about a fire in the Ville. And my father hadn't raised me to act that way. My dad was married to my mom 50 years. I never heard that man raise his voice to my mother. He was a hard-working man on the railroad and provided a good home. And I don't know where those actions of mine come from. And I was ashamed of that. I felt a lot of guilt and shame over that, and I didn't know how I was going to make that right. And I went to my locker that morning and opened it up, and there's a big bottle in there with a red dot on it, and that's called Akadama wine. And I took that bottle of wine down that morning and screwed the cap on it and chug-lugged two or three big mouthfuls of it. And I didn't throw it up. So I drank a little bit more wine and went out to formation. And by the time that formation was over and I come back into barracks, something funny had happened to me. My headache was gone. My stomach settled down. I didn't have a hangover no more. Now, what that tells me is if I drink in the morning, I don't have to be sick. I went right back to that locker, got that bottle of wine out, got my canteen cup out, poured some in it, and I walked around drinking that wine that morning. 20 minutes later, I started to brag about hit that guy with a pool cue. I started bragging about setting that woman's house on fire and stealing my money back. You see, when I drank, I don't care about responsibility. I don't care about being loyal to my wife, my kids. I don't care about paying bills. I don't care about being honest. When I drink, what I care about is me. I am the mighty I am. Me, 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 me. And I became a morning drinker and a daily drinker at the age of 17. All my money went on booze and women in the bars, and I became a bar fighter. And I'm too light to fight, too thin to win. I developed a technique of ambush. And I made a stripe, and they took it away from me. And then they restricted me to the base. And then they restricted me to my barracks. And if you'd have walked up to me over and said, you know what, Frank, every time you drink, you get in trouble, man. You ought to watch your drinking. I could have given you 1,000 reasons why alcohol played no part in any of the trouble I had. I had absolutely reasons why that's not true. And you think about it. Sit here and think about it right now. If that guy in the bar hadn't have lipped off, I wouldn't have hit him. So it ain't my fault, it's his fault. He needs to learn how to talk to people. And if the duty NCO hadn't have said, shut up and go hit the rack, I would not have smacked the duty NCO. The duty NCO needs to learn to communicate with people. So you see, it's not my fault, it's their fault. And when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I blamed everybody and everything for my problems. I blamed my wife, the kids, the job, the police. I blamed everybody. I was a victim when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know about you. And the old timers in my home group snapped me up and said, if you want to see what the problem is, Slim, go look in the mirror. The 12 steps in that big book of Alcoholics Anonymous are made for you to work, not the people around you. Your wife don't have to work this program. Your kids don't have to work this program. Your boss don't have to work this program. You do. You have to change and become different, or you'll drink again. Because the person that walked into AA, Frank, had to drink to live out there in that world and act the way he was acting. And I heard that. So I had to start taking responsibilities here in AA. But what happened was I run out of money to drink on over there, and I decided and perceived that the cab drivers overseas are ripping us servicemen off. And we needed an advocate. And so I was going to get back some of my money that he ripped me off for. And he fought back, and I beat his face in with a rock. And that man almost died, and I was in a lot of trouble. And they put me in the brig, and my dad flew to Okinawa and met with the commanding general. And he paid for the guy's surgery and paid for his retirement, gave the cab company some cash. And I just begged the Marine Corps not to throw me out. It's the only thing I knew how to do, and he had brought letters from home. Some deal was cut somewhere along the line. This was 1963. And what happened was by the time paperwork went through to send me back to duty after my court-martial, I spent almost a year locked up in that brig. If you'd have told me it was behind drinking alcohol and fighting and carrying on, I could have given you reasons why that's not true. They let me out of that brig, and they sent me to Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. And I went through Illinois on leave on my way down there, and I met a girl out of high school. I married her and took her down to North Carolina with me. She wants me to stay home and be a husband. And I'm a bar drinker. I like the intelligent guys and the beautiful women in the bars. And I don't know what you guys would do to get out of the house, but I tell you what I'd do. I'd start a fight with her and make it look like it's her fault. And then we're having a cuss fight, the way alcoholics have, because we're both drinking, we're yelling and screaming at each other, and now I can't drink in a noisy place. I got to get the hell out of there, and that gives me the reason to get out of there, is the way she's acting. And so now I go out in the bars in Jacksonville, and I'm drinking out there, and some guy would invariably say something. I'd hit him with a glass ashtray or a bottle of beer, and they'd call the Jacksonville police, and I'd leave that bar, and I'd go in another bar. And guys like me don't feel like a man no matter what they're doing, and I have to be validated. And what guys like me do is validate themselves with another woman. And so I'd lock eyes with some honey in the bar, and then her and I had trudged the road of happy destiny to her place. And we do what we got to do, and then I'm laying there sobering up, and I'm starting to think. And you should never drink and think. That's a bad deal. And what I'm feeling and what I'm thinking about is it's not her fault. You see, it's my fault. And I'm having the feelings that you feel when you're a liar. And I'm having the feelings and the thoughts that you have when you're a cheat and when you're unfaithful. And I can't go home and look at that woman now because of the way I feel. So I stop in a bar and have a couple of shooters and a beer. And what my head says to me is, this is just what guys do. This ain't a big deal. This is a guy thing. Come on. This ain't nothing. And so I go home and I walk in and she says, where have you been? Now I hate that question. I wouldn't be a liar if she hadn't asked that question. And so now we're having another cuss fight. I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and what I found out is my wife is none of my business. It's not my job to tell her what to do. It's not my job to tell my wife what to wear. It's not my job to tell my wife what to cook for dinner or how to clean that house. My sponsor told me, if you don't like how that house looks, clean it yourself and shut your mouth about it. She's evidently happy with the way it looks. My sponsor told me, if you don't like what your wife cooks for dinner, you cook your own damn dinner and keep your mouth shut about it. She evidently likes what she cooked for dinner. I had to learn in Alcoholics Anonymous how to be a husband. I had to learn that it takes two, and it's a relationship, and it's give and take, and I had to learn to treat her the way I wanted to be treated. And then we had a kid. I don't know how to treat kids. Kids make messes. They break things. They spill stuff. They knock stuff over. What? You know, they even crap in their diapers. What's up with that? No human should do that. Not in my mind. And so I'd shake her and I'd throw her in that crib, and the guilt and shame comes over me. I'm a bad father. I know I'm a bad father. The wife starts on me. We're having a cuss fight. Now they're crying. And I got to get the hell out of there. And the only thing that takes that guilt and shame away of being a bad father is a couple of shots of whiskey and a beer. and it tells me I'm okay. I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, I found out kids are little people. That's how kids grow up. That's how kids learn. You see, I didn't know how to be a dad when I got here. The old timers in my home group and the people in AA taught me how to be a father and how to treat kids. I didn't know how. I didn't have a clue. I thought I had to be the boss. What my sponsor told me and the people in my home group is you treat that kid the way you would a newcomer. The only time you touch that child is if you're going to put your arms around him. Lower your voice in that house. Don't walk around yelling and screaming. Clean your language up. You don't cuss around your wife and your kids. Your wife and kids don't need to hear the language that you used to use in the bars. That's just a mental midget trying to express himself forcibly. So I had to learn in Alcoholics Anonymous how to act at home, because I didn't know how to act at home. I was ashamed of that for a long time. And then what happened, I got called into the CO's office one day, and they issued me a rifle with a telescope on it, live ammunition, sent me across the ocean to a place called Vietnam, and Vietnam ain't my problem. Vietnam's never been my problem. I don't have any problems except what's in the middle of my wardrobe right now. I don't have any problems but me. Most of the problems in my life are self-created. So I get to Vietnam, I'm a sniper, it's 1967, 68, I'm full of fear, I'm seeing things, it's making me crazy, and I found out a secret in Vietnam, because I can't tell anybody about that. I'm supposed to be a tough guy. I found 151 proof rum. You put that in your canteens, you drink that, you're bulletproof and invisible. Now what I can do is go out on the patrols, and then I can do the things I have to do to show all the Marines around me what a tough guy I am. And I did a lot of bad things to a lot of people. I'm not proud of that. I don't think that's macho. That's where alcohol allows me to go to make me feel okay, to make me feel like a man, because I didn't know what a man was. And I did a lot of bad things to a lot of people. And I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and what I found out is I can't change those things. I can't undo the things in my past. All I can do is stay sober right now. I put enough of these together, I'll have a sober tonight. That's all I'm guaranteed in sobriety. What I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is I can't treat people the way I used to treat them. I can't act and do the things I used to do. I can't react to every thought or perceived injustice that's against me. I have to learn the slogans of Alcoholics Anonymous and apply them in my life, let go and let God. Easy does it. I can't take life too seriously. I got to wear it like a loose garment. I believe the big book says that. And I had to learn that in Alcoholics Anonymous because I didn't know. So I can't change those things. And I'm 26 years, 11 months sober and some change. And I'm not a wonderful human being because I'm sober over 26 years. I got to tell you that. I'm not a nice guy today. I see old timers in my home group. They walk with God hand in hand. They're about a foot off the deck. It's beautiful to see. Anytime you see an old timer levitate, it's wonderful to watch. I like seeing it. And they just float with God. You know, they're never late to work. They never cuss. They don't have impure thoughts. They don't lust after anybody. They don't have greed. They're nothing. You know, they're wonderful. And I'm not like that. I got to tell you, I know you can't tell, but I'm not. I'm a human being. I have human feelings and human emotions. I have lust. I have greed. I have sloth. I'm lazy. I still have all those things. Today I try not to act on those things. I make a lot of amends to a lot of people. I know you can't believe that either, but I do. And I'm not a good father or a good man or a good husband because I'm over 26 years sober. I'm a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what dictates that to me is my actions in Alcoholics Anonymous and the fact I have the utmost respect for AA. That I have a commitment at the meetings I attend and I try to give something back. I don't just suck the life out of it and leave like a lot of people do when they get a little bit of time. Told me, help out at the meeting. Don't be a taker. So I have to give back, and I have to keep giving. I have to be an example. I have to stick my hand out to the newcomer. I don't want to shake the newcomer's hand. I'm not going to kid you. I just do it because I'm told to do it. He said, you don't have to like it. You just got to do it. And so I do it. I do the things that I've been told to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And to this day, I've never been told to do anything that's hurt me. I've only been told things to do that's made me feel better. Made me feel more self-contained and allowed me to live out there in a world I have a hard time dealing with. That's what AA does for me. So Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me that. I'm a better husband, father, and man today than I was 26 years ago. Hopefully tomorrow I'm going to be a little bit better than I was today. And then what happened was over in Vietnam, I got blown up during the siege at Khe Sanh. I got wounded and They sent me back to the States, and I get out of the hospital, and I go home, and we'd had a son born to us while I was there. He's on the couch crying and wants everybody's attention, and my daughter wants my attention, my wife, and I got to get out in the bars and drink. I want to talk about the war because veterans, hell, that's our only claim to fame. I got to get out there and rap a fat game and be macho. And me and my wife's having that cuss fight. And we're both drinking, and I finally told her, shut up or I'll kill you. And that woman, she don't believe me. And so I go in the closet and I get the gun out I'd left home with her. And I walk back in that kitchen. My daughter's standing there. She's pulling on my pants. Son, don't shoot her mommy. And we're screaming and yelling at each other. I'm trying to get the safety off that gun. And it's rusted. And I hit a pin at the base of the receiver and I pushed the pin back in. It was a firing pin. And the gun went off. And the bullet went through my hand and down between my legs where my daughter was standing. And the bullet didn't hit her. And I'm a blessed man for that. I could have accidentally shot and killed my daughter that day in a drunken rage because my wife ain't doing what I'm trying to boss her around to do. Shortly after that, she divorced me. I couldn't believe it. I fired one shot. Come on. I shot myself. She took my kids. I drank over that. You see, alcohol tells me I'm a good father. Alcohol tells me I'm a good husband. Alcohol tells me I do the right thing. I never do anything drinking that my head hasn't told me it's okay to do it. That's what alcohol allows me to do. I don't know what it does for you. I was a drill instructor in San Diego, and I hazed and abused the recruits down there. I drank in the bars. I fought. I started to carry a gun because I'm so full of fear. 2.5 years on the drill field, I had a keen alcoholic thought. I volunteered and went back to Vietnam for a second tour. I go back over, I'm in the infantry now, and again, alcohol saved my sanity. And I did a lot of bad things to a lot of people over there, and I'm not, like I say, I'm not proud of that. I ended up getting shot up in an ambush over this time. I come back to the States. Marine Corps wants me to come back after noon chow, and I can't do that. I got to drink now to keep the demons away. Now there's things starting to follow me that I see. So I got out of the Marine Corps after 11 years active duty. I became a police officer in Southern California. You got a problem with that? Freeze! I love saying that. I can't tell my partner in a police car I'm afraid of the dark. I can't tell my partner there's demons in the alleys. I'm ashamed of that. He knows I'm a Vietnam vet. He knows I ain't afraid of anything except I'm afraid of everything. So before I go to work, I drink. Drinking takes the fear away. Now when you scare me on the streets, I get violent. I was a violent police officer in the city I worked in. I'm not proud of that. I'm fortunate enough because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I get to go in these institutions. I speak in there. I make my amends. I tell those guys what I used to be like and what I'm trying to be like today because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got married again and we had a kid and my wife got pregnant and I still don't feel like a man. So I started to have an affair with my partner. No, I have a female partner now. I don't care what your preference is. Mine is female. So I have a female partner. Her and I are having an affair. She found out I got my wife pregnant. She took offense to that. She shot me. What the hell are you clapping for? That's a guy sitting there clapping behind Keith, for God's sakes. What the hell is your problem? Oh, I know what it is. Never mind. She shot me in the head. Now, I'm going to tell you something. All you folks looked around, you seen these women clapping and all happy and shit. If you're thinking about dating them, don't do it. Because if they have a gun and you mess up, she'll shoot you. Guaranteed. If they think that's funny, it'll be funnier when they shoot you. And then it's all fun and games until you get shot. And then it's fun and games with a bullet wound. That's all. But I thought rather than get gunned down in a police car, I'd resign. And so I did. I got a real estate license. And if you think money, property, and prestige will fix your problems, if you're an alcoholic of my type, money doesn't take away alcoholism. Money doesn't take away desperation, anxiety, depression, rage. Money doesn't fix those things. Money allows you to exhibit those things in a better area. That's all. Because I made a ton of money, folks. I made enough money that I bought a brand new Cadillac and I paid cash. I bought my wife one and I paid cash. We put a house on a quarter acre with a swimming pool and a 3-hole putting green. My kids wore designer clothes and I wore diamond pinky rings and shit. I had a Mr. T starter kit before he ever came on TV. Money didn't fix my alcoholism. And at the age of 36 years old, I stood there and I looked around one day and everything I'd worked all my life to get was gone. My wife and kids had left. The house, the car, the jewelry, the clothes, everything I owned ended up in a cardboard box in the back seat of a stolen car. And then I ended up homeless, and that's a hell of a note for a former police officer. I ended up on the streets. I ended up passing blood. When I went to the bathroom, I got very sick. And if you'd have walked up to me at any time over and told me alcohol had something to do with it, I could have given you reasons why alcohol ain't got anything to do with it. I needed a younger woman. I needed a bigger house. I needed a nicer car. I needed more money. I needed this. Gimme, gimme, gimme. And a woman I had worked real estate with seen me one day on the street. She took me back to her house. She cleaned me up and took me to a doctor. That doctor gave me a physical. They let me go, and I went back out on the streets doing what I do. And then when they got the results in, she found me. She took me back to the doctor. He sent me in his office. He said, Mr. Jones, he said, I got to tell you. He says, you're addicted to alcohol the way a heroin addict is to heroin. If you don't stop drinking, you're going to die. He says, you have cirrhosis of the liver, and hole in your throat from vomiting, and he says, you have all the things you're going to have if you're living and drinking and eating and doing the things I'm doing. And when that man told me I was going to die, what I felt was relief because I was tired. It's not easy ruining your life and everybody's life that you've ever come in contact with. That's hard work. And I stood up and I shook that man's hand and I thanked him and I walked out of his office. And he said, you're going to die if you don't stop drinking. You'll die before summer. And the money they gave me to eat lunch on, I went to a liquor store. I bought a fifth of whiskey and a case of beer, and I drank as hard and as fast as I could. And to make a long story short, my parents found out I was dying on the streets and I wouldn't take care of myself, and my parents had me committed. When they strap you down in a hospital, I'm going to tell you, you're not getting out. And if I could have got undone from those restraints, I'd have went home and talked to my parents about this. Because that ain't fair. I hadn't done anything to my parents. I hadn't even spoke to them in almost 4 years. And they pumped me full of vitamin B and magnesium to help with the withdrawals, and some of them I remember and some of them I don't. I remember some of the cramps and the sweats and the little things that fly around your room. And then what happened was is they unstrapped me from that bed and they threw me in a van and they sent me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know why they did that. I'm not an alcoholic. This is the only disease in the world that will kill you, and your head will always blame something else and give you a reason not to do the things you're supposed to do in AA. And I walked into that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and there was a bunch of losers in there like you people. Doing the same crap you were doing tonight, the same crap you were doing over at Rich's house. Everybody's hugging each other and shit, kissing, shaking hands, and everybody's glad to see everybody. And I just hated you. I hated you. And all the guys are clean. All the guys look good. The women's hair's done, their makeup's on, and you're all happy. And what I did is I judged you. You see, I judged you. I know nobody in Las Vegas judges anybody, but I judged you. And you could not, the way you look and the way you acted with each other, could not have done the things I had done. You couldn't have abused the 2 wives and 4 kids. You couldn't have done all the scalping and killing and crap I did in Vietnam. You couldn't have done the shoplifting as a kid and the nickel and dime crap you get away with. You couldn't possibly have done the things I had done. And what you guys did was said, Frank, why don't you get your coffee, shut up and sit down. And I thought, I'll rip your throat out. You said, no, there's too many of us. You ain't ripping anything. Rip a seat. They did not love me until I could love myself. And that's such crap. If you hear it, get away from me. Whoever tells you that, they're trying to kill you. I'm going to tell you that right now. Do not go around them. No, but think about this. Just give this about 30 seconds of thought. Do you think there's anybody in this entire world that could possibly love you as much as you do? When you were out there drinking and using, were you giving to charities and shit and helping Mother Teresa? Huh? Were you looking for things to do to give back? Come on, everything you did was for you. You didn't do anything for anybody that didn't benefit you. Don't kid me. You can lie to yourself if you want to. You can't kid me. So nobody's going to love you as much as you love yourself. That's a bunch of bull. They told me to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. They told me to go to AA. They told me to go to AA if you want to drink. Go to AA. Go to 90 meetings, 90 days. And when I left that meeting, I hated you. And I had to come back the next night, and I walked back in the meeting, and I looked at you, and I realized something. You ain't made the money I had made. You didn't have the clothes, the jewelry, the cars, the women. You didn't have any of that stuff. You're a bunch of losers in here. And you guys looked at me and said, Frank, you ain't got any of that shit now. You're homeless. Get your coffee, shut up, and sit down. Go to 90 meetings in 90 days. Go to AA. And I got to tell you that if you're an alcoholic of my type, what happened to me might happen to you if you don't start taking Alcoholics Anonymous seriously. If you don't get yourself a sponsor, somebody will get you in that big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, these 12 steps and involved in meetings. Not a sponsor that will talk to you about your issues. Your issues don't mean squat. You got an issue right now, okay? Go home and write about it. Show me in the book where it says go home and write about your issues. It says take a fearless and thorough moral inventory and then make a list of people you'd harm and become willing to make amends to them. It don't say write about how you feel. What do you think about yourself? Am I having sex problems? Do I have a job problem? No. What happened to me might happen to you if you don't get a sponsor to get you involved in AA as a member. Get you involved in these meetings. Giving something back to the meeting and the program rather than sucking the life out of everything you come in touch with and leaving. Because I walked out of that hospital in Indiana and I stood out there and I started crying. And all the things that I'd done all my life started sitting on my chest. And all the things I'd done in Vietnam and when I was a cop and two wives started choking me out. And I didn't want to take a drink. I haven't had a desire to take a drink of alcohol in over 26 years and 11 months. I had a desire that day to commit suicide. I had a desire to take my own life. Where do you go when you have no hope? Where do you go when you have no sponsor? You've made no friends in the meetings. You don't know the 12 steps. You don't know the slogans. You don't have the camaraderie and the fellowship that we have. Where do you go with no higher power and life is closing in on you, sucking the life out of you, and you want to take your own life? I came back to California. I found my wife and kids up in Oregon. We moved into a garage that wasn't attached to anything in the middle of a 6-acre field. We slept on the floor of that garage. We ate out of a styrofoam chest, government cheese, and block bologna. When we had cereal, my kids put water on it. And I didn't go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous because I'm a tough guy. I don't need AA. I don't need a sponsor telling me what to do. I was a sniper, for Christ's sakes. I was on the SWAT team with the police. I know discipline. I got more discipline than anybody in here. Don't talk to me about it. I've sat there and had leeches eating my ass. I don't want to hear it. I can sit there and take it. So I don't need you wimps. And at 6 months without a drink of alcohol and no meetings, I'm driving a stolen car on the Hollywood Freeway with a 45 because I'm looking for work. I need to feed my children. And I'm honking at this guy in the fast lane to get out of my way, and he don't get out of the way. And here in Las Vegas, that probably don't aggravate you people. It aggravates the hell out of me, and I rear-ended the guy. And I chased him off the freeway, and when he stopped, I stopped. I got out of the car, and I walked up with my gun, and I put it in his face, and I said, "You ever drive that slow again, I'll kill you." Now, I didn't want a bourbon and water that day. I wanted to take that man's life. I'm full of rage. I don't have a sponsor to call. I haven't made a friend in AA that can say, "What the hell's going on? Help me with this." I don't have anybody to talk me off the ledge. I don't trust in a God. I don't believe in God. Now that probably won't happen to you. Don't worry about it. You're a lot tougher and have more willpower and discipline than I ever have. At 10 months without a drink of alcohol and no meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm standing in Alpha Beta. It used to be a grocery store, and I'm buying me Pepsi and cigarettes. Do you think I'm going to buy my children milk for their cereal? I'm a taker. I've been a taker all my life. I don't give to nobody. I'm always going to get mine first because I'm selfish. And I'm standing there and the sign says 10 items or less, cash only. My head said, count that lady's items. I count her items, and she's got about 13 items in a 10-item line. Now, that don't aggravate you folks here in Vegas. And then I got to think about it. I don't know if you're a thinker, if you analyze everything, but I got to analyze stuff. I got to know why. Is 12 eggs, is that 12 items? Or is it just a dozen eggs? Is 4 apples in a bag, is that apples or is that 4 items? By the time I looked at her stuff, she had about 30 items. And I'm angry about that. And I'm standing there and I am just so full of rage, I can't stand it. And this woman broke her checkbook out. And I said, you can't write a check here, lady. It says cash on that damn side. And she turned and smiled and says, I'll be through in a minute, Sonny. I said, my name ain't Sonny. I said, I'm not Sonny right now. And you're not right. And I got to, when I get angry, I got to touch you. And I took eggs and milk and I threw that shit all over Alpha Beta. I figured by the time she went around picking it up, I'd be through the line. I didn't want a pina colada right then. I didn't want a drink. I wanted to rip her blue wig off. Where do you go when you're full of rage and desperation and anxiety and you don't have a sponsor to call? Where do you go when you haven't met anybody in AA that you can trust and talk you off that ledge? 13 months without a drink of alcohol and no meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm trying to interview for a job in this office and I'm just desperate as hell and I ain't been to any meetings. And this guy walks by and slaps me on the back and said, hey Frank, how you doing? I said, that's a personal question. Why are you prying into my private life? I said, I'll tell you how I'm doing, pal. I don't want these people in this office to hear this. And I grabbed that guy by the throat. I jerked him on the desk and I started choking him saying, how do you think I'm feeling right now, pal? Now, I had a nervous breakdown. That won't happen to you. Don't worry about it. You're a lot stronger than I am. Do not worry about that. Don't go to meetings. Don't get a sponsor. Don't work these steps. Don't respect AA. And I got to tell you how God worked in my life that day when I don't believe in God. There was an active member of my home group in that office that day, the only day that man had ever been in that office. They pulled my fingers off this guy's throat. They laid a card down and said, you need to go see him. And I don't remember this at all. They took me back to the garage and they collected up all my weapons and took my wife to his house. And they sat with me in that garage for about a week to 10 days. And I don't remember those days. And then they took me down in this man's office. And I sat in his office and I cried. And I had taken life and sobriety as far as I could take it without some kind of help. And what that man told me that day has saved my life and my sanity up to and including tonight. This is what he told me. He said, Frank, you ain't had a drink in over 13 months. He said, right this minute, he said, drinking is not your problem. He said, what you've got right now is a living problem. And you better find a living answer to your living problem. And he says, you'll probably find it in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, if you go to those meetings, there'll be a group of people that's already walked down that path before you got there. Fall in behind them and do the things they're doing. He didn't say, bring the body and the mind will follow. He said, do the things they're doing. He told me to get commitments at the meetings, to give back. Don't just be a taker. He said to sit in the front and listen and have respect for Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, don't get up and wander around the meeting. Everybody knows you're there. They know a newcomer when they see one. They know somebody with no AA program when they see one. You don't have to parade around in front of them. Sit there and shut up and listen. Have respect for Alcoholics Anonymous. It will save your life. Frank, what's that worth? He told me to get a higher power, and I said, I don't believe in God. He said, whoever puts that moon out and takes it down in the morning, pray to them. I said, I can do that. I came into these meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you people were here. And I watched you. I watched all of you. Because, see, you can tell me to do anything you want to tell me, but I ain't going to listen. I got to see it. Show me. And what you showed me is you showed me how to act. You showed me how to treat my kids. You showed me how to have a concern for somebody other than myself. I watched how you treated your wives. I watched how you treated the kids. I watched how you treated your friends. I watched the respect you had for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm glad that I got here when I did because there was a lot more respect for AA then than there is now. And I think that's sad. But this is saving my life. I must have respect. And I don't care what newcomers or old-timers think of me. I ain't running for governor. I don't need your vote. That's just the bottom line. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. You guys told me to go home and tell my wife and kids I loved them. I said, I don't even know who the hell they are. I got sober and they were just there. I'd be lying to them. And they said, well, go home and lie to them. You've lied to them 10 years, lie to them some more. And I went home and told them I loved them. And I didn't love them. I went home and just did it. I love you. I love you. Week after week. And then one day I went home and told my wife and kids I loved them. And something funny happened. I loved them. I don't know what program they'd been going to. They had changed. And what I got out of that exercise is this. You see, when my sponsor or an old timer tells me to do something in AA, I don't have to want to do it. I don't have to think it'll work or not work. I just have to do it. I just have to go do it. I've never been told to do anything in AA that's hurt me. Everything I've been told to do has helped me. It's quieted my head. It's calmed my stomach. I've built a good life in Alcoholics Anonymous. Is it wonderful? No! Everything ain't wonderful when you get sober because life's out there and life's going to happen to all of us. 9 years sober, my dad died. I went and put my 9-year medallion in his pocket, and Johnny and Clancy told me, go back, support your mom. Quit thinking about how you feel. She was married to him 50 years. So I went back and supported my mom. My brother got sober in my house, and he was a great guy, and I love my brother, and he got a rare disease when he was 17 years, 10 months sober. And he died. I just went to more meetings, talked to more newcomers. I didn't back away from AA. I love my brother. I miss him. 4 days later, my mom died. I love my mom. I just went to more meetings, talked to more newcomers, got more involved in AA, kept my sick mind off my sick self and how I felt. I have a gratitude for life today and the life I've had and the people I've known. And that's just how it is. And I ended a 31-year marriage in sobriety. And we didn't even get an attorney. We sat down and talked one day, and we had grown apart. And she was a good member of Al-Anon. She's a good lady. She raised our daughters, and she's a wonderful woman, but we grew apart. And I gave her everything, and I took all the bills. My sponsor said, well, you're noble, but you're stupid. But you know what? I can pay them a lot easier than she can, and it takes the stress off of her, and she deserves that. And I made amends to the people I needed to make amends to that were on my list. And that oldest daughter I almost shot that day in Oceanside. She's general counsel for a medical corporation in Indiana, and she's a good lady, and she has 4 of my grandkids, and she named my grandson after me. And that's not because of alcohol, not because I'm a good man. It's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's because you taught me how to treat my kids and to let them grow up and make their own decisions and not be their boss, be their example. My middle daughter has a master's degree and teaches 5th grade, and I'm proud of her. And she loves her dad. Last year I walked her down the aisle, and she was proud of me. And that's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not a good father. I'm not going to kid you. And my youngest daughter graduated from San Diego, got her bachelor's degree, and was going to be a veterinarian. And she called me and she said, Dad, I don't want to go to school 2 or 3, 4 more years. I'm going to take my second choice. And I said, what's that? And she said, I want to be a police officer. I said, when in the hell did that become your second choice? When I heard you and John talking about it. She went through LAPD Police Academy for 32 weeks and finished in the top 5 in her class. And I'm proud of her. And she took 1st in the shoot course, and she did her year's probation at Rampart Division. And I worry about her. I'm going to tell you, I know the trash that's out there on the street. And I told her partner, I said, if I ever get called and I got to go to the hospital because she's injured, when I get there, you need to be injured also, even if it's self-inflicted. And he looked at my daughter and he said, is he serious? And she said, oh, yeah, he is. But I love my kids. See, and my son, he spent 13 out of 17 years in state prison. He's a violent, angry alcoholic. I don't know where he got it from. But he kept coming in and out of AA. He couldn't get this deal. He couldn't surrender. He wouldn't get a sponsor. He wouldn't do what he was asked to do. And I finally told him one day, you're probably not an alcoholic, Dave. You're probably a drug addict. He went to NA and he had 5 years sober and clean. I got a call last night from my daughter that's a police officer, and she said, Dad, your son's going back to prison. I said, why? She said, he got stopped tonight by attack unit. He had a sawed-off shotgun, 2 pistols, a ski mask in his car, heroin and crack cocaine. He had went back out 2 weeks ago. I love my son. It's the only son I got. It's the only member of the Jones family to carry the name. But you know what? I can't save him. He's got to do what he's got to do. If you can't get the answer here, that will be your lot in life also. I hate to tell you that. They're not going to add a chapter in the big book to anybody sitting in this room. I really don't give a shit what you think. They are not going to add you in that big book. If you don't surrender to this program and do what you're supposed to do, you have no chance. This disease will kill you as sure as we're sitting here. I got to tell you this, and then I'll sit down. I married a beautiful woman that I met on the job. She's not an alcoholic. She didn't know what AA was. She went to hear me speak. When we were coming back from San Diego, she said, "Did you really do those things, or did they write that down and have you say that?" I said, "Well, in a general way, I did them." And she came to my home group, and she met the men and the women in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she loves you people. And she said, "They're a bunch of great people." And I said, "Well, not really." And she said, "Yeah, they are. They're a bunch of great people." She said, "I love all of them." And I said, "Yeah, your perception is really bad. They are not good people." And she said one thing. She said, "Look at what they've done for you." I didn't have an answer for that. You see, look at what they've done for me. They put me to the center of life that I could have never dreamed that I've had. I'm a blessed and lucky man. I know that. And it's because of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm willing to take the actions that I've been told to take. If you're new or used tonight, you don't have to listen to anything I've said. It don't mean nothing to anybody in here. It only means something to me. I need to remember what I used to be like, what happened to me, and what my life is like today, and I have a quiet head and a calm stomach. If you're new or used, listen to that first line of chapter 5 and take it to heart. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Thanks.